Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival. Visit catskill-cuisine.com to learn more and buy tickets.
Hello to everyone. I'm Louisa Kasdan, your host for Let's Talk About Food, a podcast devoted to first-person storytelling where food plays a pivotal, if not a starring role. Everyone has a food story. Food is at the heart of human connection, at the center of love, of ritual, of need and want, and most of all, food creates community. And community is what we crave. Writer, chef, and mega blogger Phoebe Lapine's new book, Carbivore, is a paean to the joys and the nerdy science of carbs. She trashes the no-carb revolution and replaces it with easy-to-digest science and wonderful-to-ingest recipes that work whether you are a yes-on-carb or no-on-carb freak. After her own challenging health issues, Phoebe studied herself and how her diet affected her body, her moods, and her well-being. Who knew that normal people would wear a continuous glucose monitor just for fun? It's a fascinating conversation with a very smart woman. Let's have a listen. We're talking to Phoebe Lapine today, who is the author of a very fun and interesting and useful new cookbook called Carbivore. This isn't her first book. We're going to ask her about her other books and how she came to write this book. But the whole idea of a cookbook where instead of demonizing carbs, carbs are back. Carbs are really back. Phoebe, how did you come to write this book?
Oh, man. I've had a long health saga, but before I thought about my health at all, I was a cookbook author and a recipe developer and a private chef living in New York. Once I started to turn my eyes toward health because I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, I've always come at it with the love of an omnivore and a true passionate foodie, even though I hate that word. So this is my fourth book, and I kept getting such conflicting information during my health journey from doctors and from experts on the internet about the role that carbs play in our health. I think so many people were just spreading the gospel of carbophobia, and some of it was warranted. We did take a step back in the 90s when we removed fat from all our food and started processing even more and lost sight of the role of our blood sugar in our metabolism. But I started feeling like the pendulum was swinging too far to the other side. And so this book is really my solution, my passion and my mission to try and have people, even those with chronic illnesses, embracing a more diverse and varied diet and thinking about food not just as medicine, but also as a great source of pleasure and enjoyment.
It is. And I have to say, the recipes are great. The recipes are really fun. I've made three of them so far. I want to know how you became so interested in food. And I also want to know a little bit about your health journey. So let's start a little bit at the beginning with Phoebe. Did you grow up cooking, loving food? Did you go to cooking school?
What? I did. My mother is a wonderful cook. She always was a little bit of a Francophile and so raised me just with really good whole foods. She was ahead of her time on the health front as well. She always bought quinoa and millet before they were just everyday foods at Whole Foods. Back when Whole Foods was just your corner health food store. But she was never a zealot about anything. And so I think I just, more importantly than anything else, was raised to enjoy vegetables and whole grains and different ingredients. And then, yeah, I started a food blog in the nascency of blogging and the dark ages of blogging back in 2008. And it was a great niche for 20-somethings cooking in first small New York City apartments on a limited budget with limited time.
This was called Feed Me, Phoebe?
No, that's my blog. My first book was called In the Small Kitchen, and that was based on a different site. And yeah, I had a co-author at the time, my best friend from high school, and we got a book deal really early on before we really knew what we were doing. And so that kind of catalyzed this whole career. And I just took on a ton of different odd food jobs. I never went to culinary school. I joke that I'm not credentialed in anything other than being a huge nerd. And then, yeah, it was ironic because a few months before that book came out in 2011, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease and learned I had to turn my diet upside down, discovered that gluten was a really big problem for me. I'm not celiac, but I have something called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And so I embarked on my first ever book tour on the cheap, being scrappy, making like chocolate chip cookies for 200 people and not being able to eat any of them. It was very soul crushing for me. And then I had to figure out, oh God, I'm this like fledgling chef and recipe developer. How do I do that if I'm not an omnivore? So I always had a little bit of an angsty relationship with cutting out whole food groups and having to turn my diet upside down.
Wait, so you were on book tour with this first book and you can't eat gluten and you're making chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Regular chocolate chip
cookies. Oh, yeah. The whole book is I couldn't eat half of the book.
I do understand that. There are many things I make that I cannot eat. And what is Hashimoto's, whatever it is, that is...
Yes, it's a mouthful.
It's quite a name.
Yes, yeah. It is an autoimmune disease that affects the thyroid gland. So a lot of people have hypothyroidism, which means your thyroid is sluggish and not functioning optimally. And those who have the autoimmune version have antibodies that cause the body to attack our thyroid tissue, and that kind of contributes to the hypothyroidism. So a lot of people actually with this condition find that gluten is problematic because of something called molecular mimicry. The thyroid protein and the gluten protein are similar. So when our body is attacking one, it mistakes the other. So that was actually, it was really beneficial for me, and I found a higher plateau after that. But there were still a lot of things that I didn't fully understand. I was really young. I was in my early 20s before this diagnosis. I didn't know what a thyroid was. I didn't know what an autoimmune disease was. And so after that first book, I turned a corner and started to dip my feet into the world of more functional, holistic health, and found that there was a lot of noise on the internet and a lot of confusion. And again, yeah, I just was trying to find that middle ground for myself. And I suspected that there are other people out there who didn't have a crazy budget and weren't able to turn their entire lives upside down and replace the contents of their apartment with baking soda and organic cotton. And so that was the subject of my second book, The Wellness Project, which was really where I methodically put together a curriculum for myself to figure out what practices were worth my time, money, and energy, with everything from diet, of course, but also sleep, stress management, movement, hydration, you name it.
What are some of the things that you learned in the Wellness Project that A, surprised you, and B, has stuck with you?
Yeah. So I think my big macro learnings were that you have to set yourself up for success at home to find more flexibility out in the world. I like to think of my philosophy as something I've coined as healthy hedonism. So figuring out how to balance the things that nourish our body with the things that feed our spirit. And I think so much of wellness in this day and age can become a really overwhelming laundry list of to-dos. And the truth is that you don't have to do everything all at once. It's really all about building a toolkit that you can reach into and pull out one or two things on any given day, because no matter what, you can't control your circumstances. You can't control what life throws at you. And I think there's such a loud voice in the wellness zeitgeist of biohacker bros who are teaching you how to, you know, drill down to every single quadrant and how to live optimally. And really, it's just a lot of control and can become a real point of obsession for people. I know I felt myself dipping into that territory. So I always say, if you're stressing about what you're eating all the time, no amount of kale will make you healthy. So that's, again, my mission with this book is to help people feel a little calmer about carbs as a food group. And then conversely, that healthy hedonism to also make sure that they're not causing as much havoc with your blood sugar.
I love that phrase, healthy hedonism. Talk more about that.
Yeah. So again, it's just something that you have to figure out for yourself. I have my own metrics for healthy hedonism, but other people will have their own. And I think it's important to weigh social wellness, financial wellness, your mental health, all of these other aspects, in addition to just how something cut and dry makes you feel. So for me, as I was sorting through all of these new practices, I had to ask myself if something was really showing a huge physical improvement. Okay, maybe that would outweigh it being completely miserable, or maybe it didn't. But I think there's enough self-care practices out there that you can really pick and choose the ones that you genuinely enjoy and genuinely bring you joy. And for me, I cycle through different things in different times of my life. Right now, I'm really on an exercise kick in a way that I truly haven't been in the last 10 years. So that's where the scales are sliding right now.
I want to go back just a little bit to some of the practices that you found were, I don't know how else to put this, but possibly too obsessive or some of the things that people do, because I see a lot of that. Mm. I see a lot of people who have all of these rules for themselves, and they come into your house or into your life and they tell you all the things they can't do and can do and things like that. I wish they would stay home. So can you give me some examples of things that you were able to jettison?
I don't know. I think it's a mindset. So for me, it was more just fear that was creeping in as I ticked off the non-optimal things that I was faced with. And again, that's why I ended up creating like my mantra of keep things the way you want at home and then let yourself be flexible out in the world. You spend most of your time at home. So, you know, that's great. That's 80% of the battle right there. But it's really not about perfectionism. And perfectionism, I think, is the antithesis of a healthy life. I see people now, and I guess a macro thing I see is just too much recording and monitoring and letting either your blood work, or a lot of people now are wearing continuous glucose monitors to check blood sugar, which is something I talk about in my new book. But I have a lot of people who write me in a panic about every little rise and fall on their monitor. And I think at a certain point, we have to start thinking about long term and the bigger picture and realize that a day is just a day. And ultimately, you have to start living life without the guardrails. Otherwise, it really does dip into that obsession mindset.
I have to admit that when I was reading Carbivore and reading the introductory chapters, the first parts before you get into the recipes, and I read about the continuous glucose monitor, and I went, what? What? Most people that I know, maybe that's just me, are not as in tune with how they feel after they've eaten something or later on. Or where did that come from? That was a whole new thing for me. I did not realize that people who are not diabetic would ever think about putting on a glucose monitor.
Yeah, I think it's as the awareness for the importance of metabolic health has grown. It's not quite as common in this country. You can buy them over the counter in Europe, but there are a few companies that are direct to consumer. One's called Levels, one's called Zoe, that will give you a continuous glucose monitor. And hey, I did it for 2 weeks. I thought it was fascinating. And I think it's, again, really important for someone to get a baseline and to have some aha moments. But beyond that, I think it's more important to tune into how you feel. So for Carbivore, I give people a symptom and activity tracker that you know, they can use in lieu of a continuous glucose monitor, since in this country you need a doctor's prescription, since, as you mentioned, it is much more common a tool for someone with diabetes or insulin resistance of any sort who really need to monitor for health reasons. There's this culture of biohacking now in the wellness world.
What is biohacking? I don't know how you would define it,
but it's really just following your health to a microscopic degree and trying to, I don't know, tailor your lifestyle in a way that allows you to optimize everything.
Can we blame it all on the Apple Watch or on Fitbit trackers and things like that? Is that how people do it?
That's how some people do it. There's something called the Oura Ring that people are really into right now. That also, in theory, tracks your blood sugar. I don't know how, but or maybe it's just your heart rate. I don't know. I've never worn one. My husband has. He went through a phase with it for a month or two.
Biohacking. What a concept. What a concept. I'll come back to the book, because one of the things I liked, the subtitle of the book is 130 healthy recipes to stop fearing carbs and embrace the comfort foods you love. But the book is gluten-free. It's a lot of things. Tell me how, when you started coming up with this concept, was it hard to come up with recipes you liked?
Oh, not at all. The whole book is, and all of my food are really based upon the comfort foods that I grew up with, that I love. And as I mentioned, a lot of the comfort foods I grew up with did include a lot of vegetables. But no, my whole philosophy is about adding, not taking away. And it's not rocket science. Like, the best thing that you can do for your metabolic health, for your gut health, is to just add more plants to your plate. So there's tons of fiber-rich vegetables that are added to offset our carbs and to feed our good gut critters and our microbiome. Lots of nuts and seeds that I'll add to pasta, to potatoes. And I think that these things just make a dish more delicious. They add texture, they add interesting spices. And if you're someone who doesn't care about your health at all, you can pick up the book and not even realize it's a health book and just explore new and interesting dishes. I try and keep a lot of global influences in the book beyond just the Mediterranean diet, but the lessons of the Mediterranean diet are what are baked into the book. Just lots of lean protein, healthy fat, and a lot of beans and legumes. I've dealt with some pretty restrictive diets over the years. My previous book, my third book, was all about SIBO, which is a niche gut health condition. And I had to do recipes for the low FODMAP diet in that one, which is actually interesting in the context of carbohydrates, because it eliminates a lot of carbohydrates. It's an acronym that stands for more scientific subsets of carbohydrates. But that is a super restrictive diet. And so when I was developing recipes for that, yes, it was hard sometimes to find a lot of dishes that I loved, but I persevered, and the recipes in that book actually are some of my favorites that just eliminate a couple triggering things like garlic and onion for people who are dealing with that kind of gut issue.
And we'll be back with Phoebe Lapine in just a minute.
Gather your friends and family at the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival, presented by the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and Resorts World Catskills. Mark your calendars for a flavor-packed weekend from May 10th to May 12th. Experience the fusion of phenomenal food and electrifying entertainment. Rub shoulders with your favorite Food Network personalities, including Andrew Zimmern, Michael Simon, Scott Conant, Marcus Samuelson, Jeffrey Zakarian, Anne Burrell, Melba Wilson, and distinguished international chefs by LaBelle Farms. Kick off the festivities with Friday's star-studded golf tournament and evening reception. Saturday heats up with free tastings, thrilling live demos, music, and family activities, culminating with a gourmet dinner hosted by celebrity chefs. And on Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with a special celebrity-curated brunch. Tickets for this celebration are selling like hotcakes. Visit Catskill-Cuisine.com to grab your pass for this unforgettable weekend in the picturesque Catskills. See you there!
And we are back with Phoebe Lapine, author of Carbivore. FODMAP is a diet that I think is joyless for a lot of people. So I should probably look into your book because I bet the recipes are great. When people think of carbohydrates, they're usually thinking they're cutting down on carbs, they're cutting down on bread, they're cutting down on pasta. They don't think of all of the other formats. And I think that is one of the great services of your book. They're like, there's a lot of carbs that you haven't thought about are carbs beyond the narrow description. I was relieved to say, okay, there's a lot of carbs you can eat without restricting yourself from, I don't eat bread, I don't eat pasta. In fact, I'm eating a lot of carbs anyhow, even if I think I'm not. And you drill down on sugar as the big issue. You say that you're a self-proclaimed nerd, and it's obvious to me reading the book that you've done a lot of nutrition and dietary science research. But how did you prepare your mind for all of this?
Prepare my mind for the recipes? I organized the book by type of carb: oats, rice, whole grains from around the world, potatoes, bread, pasta, legumes, corn. But I really wanted to start by explaining to people what is a carb and a carbohydrate. So carb is a slang term, and it's really referring to starch. Starch is a type of carbohydrate. All sugars are types of carbohydrates. All vegetables are types of carbohydrates. And everything is made up with some construction of glucose. And even fiber is glucose, all strung together. But the beauty of fiber is that it can't be broken down by our small intestine. So it's never going to enter the bloodstream. It's going to pass on through to our large intestine and feed our good gut critters. Whereas starch, if there isn't enough fiber involved in it, if it's too refined and doesn't have the composition of the built-in fiber that various seed-based grains are found in the wild to have, or a potato with all its skin on, which has much more fiber than the fleshy center, then that can be broken down pretty quickly in the body and absorbed into our bloodstream. So I won't say it will function the same way as sugar, because fructose, which is unique to fruit sugars, it is a fruit sugar, acts differently in the body in that our liver has to metabolize it differently. And when we have too much excess of fructose, it can cause a range of problems. And really, when we're talking about our blood sugar metabolism and optimizing that, we just don't want to have too much of a good thing all at once. We need glucose to live. If we were to eat nothing, or if we were to eat just a carnivore diet, our body would still find a way to release glucose into the bloodstream. You'd still see the rise and fall of your blood sugar on a continuous glucose monitor, or you would feel it in some way. I don't know. Sometimes it's like barely perceptible. But again, you would maybe feel the sluggishness if your body didn't do that, because we need that energy to live. So yeah, it's really about just slowing down the processing of those carbs, those simple sugars. And that's why I say the mantra of the book is slow carb, not low carb.
Slow carb, not low carb. So eating a baked potato, slow carb or low carb?
Again, it depends on what you're putting on it, but I think that could easily be slow carb because you have the built-in fiber of the skin. It's another kind of small little kitchen tip that I give people on what's baked into the recipes and carbivores: to leave the skin on your carrots, leave the skin on your potatoes. Also saves you time in the kitchen, and that'll just naturally up the fiber content of your meals. But for that baked potato, I have an example in the book, a recipe that is with sweet potatoes and tops those twice baked potatoes with some beans and greens and a really yummy chipotle tahini dressing. And then another recipe, which is actually one of my favorites in the book, which is a crab cake baked potato. And so it's a hollowed out baked potato using some of the flesh of the potato instead of a mass of breadcrumbs to form a crab cake, and then nestling that crab cake right in the middle of the potato. And so there you're getting really great protein. I pack in a bunch of herbs and veggies into that crab cake, and it's just adding more bulk to your carbs, more things that will slow the carbs roll to your bloodstream. I call anything with added fiber, healthy fats, or protein as a carb companion. And that's like what the book is all about. It's just recipes with all these beautiful carb companions that also make the food taste that much more delicious. Who doesn't want a crab cake on a baked potato?
I have never thought about having a crab cake on a baked potato. But Last night, I made the linguine with chorizo, clams, and kale, and it came out. It was beautiful. And as somebody who, lots of times I make things with gluten-free pasta, and they're awful. But this had enough excitement. It was very good.
I'm so glad.
It's good. Because I have to say, as someone who tends not to eat a whole lot of gluten for a whole bunch of reasons, gluten-free pasta on its own is a disappointing experience.
Yes, it so definitely can with, yeah. be. So I say the book is gluten optional because you can use whatever pasta you like in the pasta chapter, whatever bread you like in the bread chapter. But I, being gluten-free for 13 plus years now, have tested everything with the gluten-free alternatives. So I say to people who don't follow that diet, you know it has to be good if it's good with the gluten-free stuff.
If it's good gluten-free, it has to be a really good recipe. That is for sure. Now, I thought the recipes were great. I also loved the pictures, by the way. I thought they
were
great.
Thank you.
So here you are coming up with recipes. You've already accepted the constraints that you've put on the content of the recipes. How long does it take you to tweak a recipe before you're happy with it?
Oh, my gosh. It really depends. Sometimes, as in the case of the Violet's Big Blueberry Muffins, I think I made those over a dozen times, just tweaking it to get it right. I'm not an expert baker, probably because I've been gluten-free for 13 years. So it's always been a little bit of a frustration point. But it was funny. It's like every batch was delicious, but there was always just something like a little off. Like it was making 10 muffins instead of 12. And then you have to like rejigger all the quantities and the ingredients. But yeah, I think in particular baked goods, I always want to test a few extra times to make sure that they're perfect and foolproof. And then some of the savory options are based on formulas that I've tried many different times. So one of my favorite recipes in the book is this Moroccan chicken and rice casserole. And on my blog, Feed Me Phoebe, I make many chicken and rice casseroles. I say that it is my true art, the chicken and rice casserole. And it's really easy. I use arborio rice, and that kind of lends a starchiness, a creaminess to the casserole that allows you to do it dump and stir, but without adding any cream of whatever soup. And I've tried it with all sorts of different flavor profiles. But again, because I use the same formula, the same amount of liquid, the same amount of rice, the same amount of chicken, it's about varying the flavor profile and the vegetables. And yeah, that one I probably didn't tinker with as much, but I always make things usually at least twice. And then I had 200 people from my community who volunteered to be recipe testers for this book. People were so excited about the concept of healthy carbs. And so that was a nightmare to manage from a logistical standpoint, but I made sure I had at least three different testers for each recipe, and oftentimes even more. And so that is also kind of something that I like to have. And I know some people use professional testers, but I like having lay people try it. And I always find really interesting feedback. I think it's great to have people from different parts of the country with different constraints in their kitchen, different equipment. I love getting that kind of crowdsourced feedback.
I'm with you on that. It seems to me that the people, if your audience are people who are sitting in their kitchens at home and not sophisticated recipe testers, you're going to find out how people use the book.
Exactly. And a lot of them had ideas that I hadn't thought of. I say at the onset, I would really like you to make this as written and not tweak anything. But oh my God, people always tweak and they at least tell me what they do. But in some cases, I was like, oh, that's a great idea. I wouldn't have thought to add that. I'll put it in the notes as an extra carb companion. A lot of the recipes have little sidebars. One's a carb swap. So it'll tell you if you can swap in a different type of carb, which you often can. Some of them change of season notes, so you can swap in a different type of vegetable, a different type of fruit, depending on what's seasonal, and then extra carb companions. So if you ever want to add even more fibrous goodness to your bowls, there's always more that can be done.
There's always more that can be done. I also made the ginger salmon burgers, and I have never made a salmon burger in my life, and that got a thumbs up in my household, so that was good. So, no, I love this book. What's next for you?
Oh
now
my
you
gosh.
You conquered.
I don't know.
And I recommend to our listeners not only the book and not only the recipes, but also the first couple of chapters, which are just chock-a-block full with all sorts of knowledge and information that I didn't have. The only thing I really hated about the introductory chapters were the idea of going caffeine, alcohol, and sugar-free for 2 weeks. Like, screw that. I'm not doing that.
That was one of my experiments for the Wellness Project. And again, that was one where the physical benefits did not outweigh the emotional pains. But it is a good reset. I do it like once a year just to get back to a good baseline. But yes, it is not something I advocate for as a lifestyle.
So what are you going to do next?
Oh, I don't know. I'm still riding the wave of this book. I have a 14-month-old at home who has very specific tastes already. So maybe there'll be something around that. It certainly changed the way that I cook and even just my own recipes. I'm like, oh my gosh, like sometimes I just need really quick, really easy stuff. And there are tons of options like that in the book. But yeah, it's a whole different ball game in some ways.
No, I loved it. And most of the recipes, if your pantry is sufficiently stocked, were not hard to make.
Yeah.
And they were fun to make. They were a little bit science experiment, but very delicious.
Okay. I hope they weren't too much of a science experiment. That was not my intention. I think the average person, if you turn to one of those recipes, wouldn't see anything much different than what's on my site. Just veggie forward, yummy carb dishes.
Phoebe, the book is wonderful, but if I'm pressed for time, is it digital? How do I find the book? How do we recommend that people can listen to it or read it?
Yes. Yeah, so it's in all forms. If you go to carbivorecookbook.com, you can find all the links to purchase. And sometimes your browser will autocorrect to carnivore. So I do recommend just making it easy and going straight to carbivorecookbook.com. But there's actually an audio version. So if you have extra credits on Audible or you're just an audio learner of any sort, it's like an extended podcast, 2.5 hours. And I will read you the first 50 pages of the book, which has tons of great information, as you mentioned. And then all of the recipes are the remainder of the book, the other 75%. And you can just flip through that at your leisure. But the nice thing about the audio version is that they'll send you the digital version of the recipes with all the photos and everything too.
Great. Good to know. And I can imagine, now that I've read it, I can imagine it would be great to listen to in the car and focus on. Wonderful. Thank you. Phoebe, great to talk to you. I've really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
I wish you all the best. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Let's Talk About Food is produced by The Food Voice. I'm producing, along with audio director and composer Mike Moss of Soundscape Boston. You can find more of our stories at our website, letstalkaboutfood.com, and on Heritage Radio or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's Talk About Food is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.